Welcome, everybody, to the new edition of Holy Commutes. This is Texas Tim, Tim Dean, on Tuesday, April 5th. Got a special guest on tonight. Well, all my guests are special, so I'll just say that right off the bat. I like to bring on some interesting characters. I got one here this evening. I have with me Kel Johnson, the commissioner of the JAL Wiffleball League. Kel, welcome, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Happy to be on here, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Now, Kel, you know, this is the recording's coming out on April 5th, and we're doing it a few days before, and I understand that you're a big Kansas Jayhawk fan.
Yeah, it's where I went to school. It's where my parents went to school. So it's a big weekend for us. Big weekend.
It is. And maybe by the time this recording goes live on Tuesday, you'll be celebrating a national championship from Monday night. And so we'll see how that goes.
That would be ideal.
So the JAL, and we were talking right before we went on the air that I said, is it JAL? And you said JAL. So tell me, what does the JAL stand for?
Stands for nothing. It used to stand for Johnson Association of Lawn Ball, which is basically what kind of just what we called the style that we were playing when we first started of wiffle ball. It was kind of goofy. So once the league kind of started getting a little bigger, we just scrapped that. But the logo was already made. Everyone already kind of knew what it was. The logo was getting put on like jerseys and such. So it was like, we just left it, but it means nothing.
But that's cool though. It's really interesting. I know that it is interesting to hear about the names of certain leagues when you see them, and it's really interesting. So I'm glad you told me that I was pronouncing it wrong mostly. And I'm sure a lot of people still say JAL, but what city do you play in?
Well, the games are almost always played in Castle Rock, Washington, which I wouldn't call a city. It's just a town of, I don't know, maybe like 3,000, 4,000 people. But Castle Rock is located about an hour north of Portland, Oregon, and about two and a half hours south of Seattle. So we're kind of in no man's land a little bit, but we draw from Portland and then up to the Seattle sort of metro area. I guess we've got guys coming from those areas, but most of the people play in and around Castle Rock within, I'd say, probably a 20 to 25 mile radius is probably 75% of the guys in the league.
Well, it's interesting that you have people coming around that far, and you play most of your games on the weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, our latest game day was on a Monday night last week. But that was mostly just because one of the guys on one of the teams that was playing is a college baseball guy. So he's got games on the weekends all the time right now. And the teams they're playing, most of the guys were local. So it just worked out for us to be able to do that on a Monday night. But yeah, most of the time it's on the weekends, usually Sundays.
So I've watched some footage of your games. Are you playing in like a municipal park or someone's property? Where are you playing at?
Yeah, we've played a lot of different places actually, because we don't really have our own place. I would say most of the league's existence, and also right at this particular moment in time, we're playing on school property. Although where we're playing at right now, this season and last season, is technically school property, but really it's just this giant open field kind of nearby the school that nobody uses for anything. So it's not really a park, but it's kind of just, it's our home for now. But we've had a couple different places over the last maybe 3, 4, or 5 seasons that basically were like someone's backyard. And then, they built a field out of it and whatever. And we're hoping to get back to one of those maybe by the end of this season, if not next season. The guy's kind of renovating his house and he's kind of redoing his whole backyard and his whole field. So that kind of, we haven't been able to use that for a while. But Yeah, we don't really have our own field. So that's probably the biggest thing that, like, as a commissioner, you know, I wish that we had.
And that surprises me, and I can tell that's a goal, because everything about your league that I see looks very professional. Your website looks good. You've got good social media. You require the guys to play in uniform, and so it looks very clean. And so to not have a permanent home, I'm sure sometimes drives you crazy.
Yeah, and one thing about, I don't know if you've ever been out to the Northwest, but actually myself and quite a few other guys in the league actually have a good amount of, like, property that our houses are on and whatnot, but it's so hilly and foresty around here that there's actually not a lot. Even if you own several acres, it might not mean that you even have room to, like, have a wiffle ball field. So it's kind of tough that way sometimes.
Tell me about the history of your league. When did it start? How did it start? Tell me about the origin.
All right. So it began back in 2015. So we're 7 years in now. Let's see. Basically, it started, I was home from college, home from Kansas one summer, and me and my two brothers, Ty and Brock, we just started playing some wiffle ball. This probably sounds like a lot of origin stories, but we started playing some wiffle ball, decided to have a couple tournaments with some friends and family. And basically that turned into, why don't we make this sort of like a league? And then basically the league was just operating as like these one-off tournaments for all the way through JL 14, but they kept getting bigger and bigger. And then by JL 15, we had maybe like 10 teams by then, or franchises. And, you know, there were too many people at that point playing that it was like, we can't do this on one day anymore. So that's when we decided to go to like the bigger, more stretched out extended seasons. And, so since JL 15, we're on JL 23 now. Each team plays 8 games regular season, which isn't actually a lot because the season's stretched out like 4 to 5 months long. But there's 12 franchises, and then there's one big day of playoffs at the end. So, yeah, I mean, that's a really quick version of the story.
So are you playing 2 seasons a year or just 1 season a calendar year?
It's kind of weird. We don't have, it's not like every year opening day is on, you know, April 1st and the season ends in October. Like, that's not really how it operates every year. It kind of just goes, the season's about 5 months, give or take. And then we take 2 to 3 months off depending on what time of the year it is at that particular moment. And then we hop back in. So you actually kind of end up with it kind of being all over the place in terms of the calendar. Mm-hmm. For example, let's see, JL 20 ended in June, and then we picked up JL 21 like in September of that year, and then that ended, I think, like that ended in late January, and then we picked up JL 22 in, I think it was May, and that was last season, that ended in on Halloween basically, and then we picked up this season in early March, early last month. So, and then it's going to end in mid-August, so it kind of just it goes in a rotation like that.
Okay, so for people listening that don't know a lot about your style of play, take us through some cliff note versions of your basic rules.
Well, I think most people would say our rules are weird, and that's basically all because of our one pitch rule, which is every at bat or every plate appearance, whatever you want to call it, is one pitch. So basically, pitcher throws, if he hits the zone and it's a strike, then it's a strikeout, or if you swing and you miss, a strikeout. If he misses the zone, then it's, you know, a ball, but it's also a walk, next guy's up. a couple seasons ago, we added a foul finally, which was a good addition. So you can foul off, you know, as many times as you can, but the game moves really fast. We don't have base running. It's, you know, you hit it past the single line, single, double line, double. If it goes through the home run line on the ground, it's a triple. Most of the time we play without a fence, because, you know, like I said earlier, we don't really have our own place, so not going to import a fence in there every time. But the times we have played on private fields, we have had fences. So in that instance, you know, if it hit the fence, it'd be a triple. Mm-hmm. But we don't play with scuff balls. It's all clean. We got big bats, and games are high scoring, man. Very high, especially this season. It's been off to a big.
I saw some of those scores. I saw some of those scores, Kale, and then I saw like the last game. I went, wait, it was like a very low scoring game. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, it's like right now we're 11 games into 48 game regular season, and league average is 317. So I doubt it's going to stay at above 300 all season, you know, but it's definitely, and it's kind of funny because you would think, I've looked at a lot of other leagues that play fast pitch and kind of what their league averages are. And this season, obviously batters for us are off to a hot start, but even the last few seasons for us playing with one pitch, you would think that'd be hard for a batter, and it definitely is. But like, if you compare it, our league averages to others, they're actually higher most of the time. Yeah. So I think that's just because the pitchers are forced to throw strikes more.
Sure.
I don't know, but it's kind of weird because it's definitely a pitcher dominated league, especially once you get into the playoffs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it can also be a very, very high scoring, very, very high flying offensive league at the same time. So it just kind of depends.
Gotcha. So tell me about you're looking at your page and looking at some of the information. What's the difference between a general manager and an owner? What are their roles with that team?
So it just kind of depends. So we have 12 franchises, like I said, and every franchise has an owner, but not necessarily every franchise has a general manager, because a lot of times the owner just wants to play both roles. Mm-hmm. But we have some owners that need general managers because actually don't even live out here where the league is. Like a couple of them are my buddies from college. One lives out closer to you by Missouri. Another one lives in Kansas. So they love the league and everything. They're super involved, but like they can't be managing the roster the same way a lot of these people out here can. So they hire GMs. And then there's a couple other owners that actually do live out here, but they don't want to be, you know, in charge of managing the roster all the time. So they also have had GMs come in and do it for them. So I guess that's the difference. If it's an owner that does both, then I mean, that's kind of self-explanatory.
You said a word that piqued my curiosity. You said hire a general manager. What do you mean by hire? I mean, when you talk about owners, did these owners purchase a team? Do they have something financially vested in the team? How does that work?
Well, maybe hire wasn't the right word because they're not actually paying their general managers. Mm-hmm. But in two or three different instances in league history over the last six or seven seasons, there has been like when a GM has been kind of like let go or quit or something, the sort of process of getting that new general manager has been kind of like a hiring process in a way, even though they're not getting paid, because you'll have like two or three different applicants, I guess. Mm-hmm. Very informal, but you know, two or three different people that would like to have that. And so then the owners kind of got to feel them out and decide which one they want to go with. So in that way, it's kind of like a hire. And then in terms of the paying money, there are some players that do, I mean, the way JL is operated, like with with the rosters and everything is everyone's on a contract with their team. Now, most players are not being paid money and don't want to be paid money because it's kind of silly, but some have been, and some even currently are right now. They have a salary in their contract, which is, you know, like maybe $50 or $100, depending on, you know, who it is. But, and the owners are good for paying them. I've seen at game days, at the end of the season, I've seen a couple different owners a couple times pull out like $100 bill and hand it to their guy. So it's kind of funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you, the JAL sort of has their own version of the NIL. That the college athletes are getting now, some of them are getting
on a much paid. Lower scale. Yeah,
right. Some of them are getting paid. Oh man, that's really fascinating. So, one of the things too, I'm impressed with looking at your webpage is your depth of your stat and data keeping. I mean, as I look at your stats, I mean, you're keeping up with, transactions, historical transactions, historical contracts, all that information is right there. Kale, are you keeping up with all that? Or you have a team of people helping?
I mean, it's mostly me.
Yeah.
I do that kind of stuff because it's stuff that I know I like to, you know, if I was just a fan, that's kind of how I try to look through the lens of it. Like if I was a fan, this is what I'd, you know, want to see like this certain guy's history or, you know, team's all-time record, all the team's schedules from the past, all the box scores from the past, just things like that, I guess. And then, you know, we post a lot of stuff too. Our media is like very, very heavy, I guess you would say. So there's a lot of neat posts you can make out of that too. A lot of like historical type of storylines you can bring in and play with when you do that. So I don't know. I think it all just, it helps really build a culture too, when you keep all that information and then play around with it.
You have people keep the books, or are you getting the data off watching the video?
I rewatch the tapes afterward and then stat them. And one thing that's kind of cool, I don't know if anybody else does this. I haven't really seen it. But I would recommend it if anybody's any like other leagues are out there listen to this and would be interested in doing it for themselves. But not only do I keep the box score of the game, but if you scroll down lower past the box score, you'll see there's like a full play-by-play of the game too. So you can actually go in and look and see like where the runners were, how many outs there were, what play happened. And that's really neat too, is to go back and go through it. Especially I've had people in the league when they're, especially like come playoff time, they'll go back and like read through that stuff and see like, okay, this is what this guy's going to throw in this type of situation. They don't even have to like rewatch the video. They can just reference that.
Oh, wow.
To learn some stuff.
You must have a lot of time on your hands. I couldn't do that. So, looking at the rule book, did I see that you got quite a few rule changes coming in 2022?
Maybe you have to let me know what I mean. We added like a base stealing thing this season.
Yeah.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, there's something to do with base running.
Yeah, it's like a hybrid base running, I would guess you would call it, because we're not actually running bases, but there is this new element we added in this season that not everyone's really figured out yet, but it's getting a little better. But basically behind the pitcher, there's a base that we put down, and then there's a little hash mark, kind of over by the sideline on the double line. The double line runs right behind the pitcher.
Okay.
And so after any strikeout or a hit, obviously you can't steal a base after a walk or a foul, but after any strikeout or hit, you can send a guy out there, if there's a man on, one of your guys out there, and he can try to physically steal the base. And how it works is, so the fielder, there's one fielder in JL behind the pitcher. The fielder's got to go throw the ball from wherever the ball was dead on the last play. So let's say pitcher throws a ball, he misses the strike zone, batter swing, it was a strikeout. but he missed the zone. So it goes and hits the backstop. Okay. So the, and they're going to steal. So the fielder's got to go to the backstop then, and he's got to throw it from there. And as soon as he picks the ball up and throws it to the pitcher, who's, you know, basically playing shortstop or first base, you know, whatever, third base, home catcher, the base runner's got to get to the bag before he's either tagged or pegged. And then now if this happened after a hit, say you hit it last game day, we actually had, it was a really, really cool play. A guy hit a triple to the corner and there was two outs. It was a close game and they had a guy on third, obviously. So the team decided we like our odds better of scoring in this inning, getting that guy in, if we try to steal this base as opposed to, you know, play it out. Cause they're playing the pitcher who's won MVP the last two seasons. So they went out there and the fielder had to throw it from the triple line where the ball crossed. And it was a really close play. Actually, there's been six attempts of this particular new rule so far in the season. Two have been successful stolen bases, four have been caught stealing, but literally all of them have been close plays, like where the guy's having to slide in. There's only been one where the fielder kind of overthrew it. So like I said, strategy, teams are still kind of learning how to use it. I recognize it's another goofy kind of jail rule. Not everybody in the league was actually super into it, but it's when we first rolled it out. But I think now people are seeing it. People have been texting me a little bit, telling me after games, hey, this is actually kind of cool. We like this, making for some neat highlights. So I think it'll be a good rule going forward, the more we use it.
So you are one of the founders or the founder of the league. Is that correct?
Yeah. Me and my two brothers, Time Brock.
How much pushback over the seasons and input or comments have you had about the one pitch rule? Have you had a lot of people lobbying, trying to change that? How has that been over the seasons received?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously people in the league that would probably, if they were on the show right now, I'd tell you I'd rather play with, you know, a 4-3 count or whatever, or even, you know, like 2-2 or something. Yep. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, they all come and they keep playing and they still love it. So even those guys that would prefer it, it's not like deterring them from playing. Nobody has ever told me they're quitting because they don't like the one pitch. So, but there's also, I will say there's a lot of people that love it too, especially a lot of pitchers because they're not destroying their arms. And then the biggest thing, and I think a lot of people realize this, some of the people who have, you know, said we should think about, you know, going to a count or whatever. Once I've kind of had the conversations with them about the logistics of it, they come around, you know. And the thing is like, we'd have to play, we'd either have to shrink the innings, games would be a lot longer. It's already hard enough to have each team play 8 games in a 5-month season. Mm-hmm. It's just a logistics thing, a lot of it. And the fact too, that we've done it for so long now, it's just part of, you know, what the league is, that it's a big thing to change. But honestly, I mean, I don't think it's necessary. Like I said, at the beginning, the league average for batting right now is over 300. Like, what batter is going to complain about that?
Right.
And at the same time, if you're a good pitcher, you can dominate and you don't have to blow your arm out doing it either. So
yeah. One of the things we do here in Texas to help not blow the arm out, and our style is different than the East Coast or the fast plastic or the UWF style, is that we play with a caught looking rule. So we use a strike zone just like yours, and we use a 4-3 count. But if the ball hits the zone and you do not swing, the batter is out caught looking. And so you can be down 3-0 and go as a pitcher going, I can throw one good pitch and get out of this inning. And the guys that have played in other parts are the rules that have come down and played in Texas goes, man, I really like this rule. I like it. And we've been doing it for over 20 years and it's just our style, just like that's your style. And it's not the purist probably would hate it. Right. So, but I've had guys that have played in the fast plastic and the UF's style rules play this and go, man, I really, really like this. It's much better on the arms. And just like yours, because they don't have a lot of options on a good pitch, they better swing. It's causing batters to keep the bat off their shoulder and swing at good pitches, right? That's what you're finding out. So they're not watching as many pitches.
Yeah, I actually like, I like the rule that you use there with the caught looking. Mm-hmm. I think if we ever, at some point, you know, expanded the count or something, it would be gradual, obviously, at first. Like we would never just hop right from one pitch to 4-3. We'd probably go to something like what you got. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I don't think people realize this. I'm not like against ever expanding our count or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's worked for so long. It works well right now. There's no reason for us to do it that, you gotcha. Know, why try to fix something that doesn't appear to be broken?
Nope.
And so comes to a point where we need to make that change, then we'll make the change. Like when we added the foul ball, that was a necessary change, a great change for the moment in the league. So if we need to expand the count at any point, then we will expand the count. But right now, yep, we don't really need to. And you know Peter Mockaby, right?
Yeah, I know Peter very well. Yeah.
So he came out and he played last season. And I don't know, he probably wasn't worried about playing in one pitch, but he was a little uneasy. I think maybe just kind of because it would feel super weird to him at first, mm-hmm. but he came out and he was ripping the ball all over the place. So I think the thing about it being really hard for batters is it might be harder for pitchers, honestly, because you got to throw strikes every time.
Yeah. So you're not always throwing your best pitch, right? You're throwing one that you can throw for a strike.
Yeah. And I mean, most of the time that's a fastball. So a lot of times batters are going up and they're seeing fastball.
Yep. Yep. Well, you're right. I'm a big ambassador of the sport. And what that means to me is that I don't care what style you play. I just want you to play. And because it is played all over the country under a myriad of different rules, base running, not base running, fences, no fences, pegging, no pegging, fast pitch, slow pitch, medium pitch, women's, men's, whatever. I don't care. It's just play. I mean, it doesn't matter. The rules, what works for someone over here is not going to work over here. It's just not the style. It's just a game. The fundamentals don't change. Pitching, fielding, and hitting. That's the three things that is in every style. And you just play. It's a toy, right? There is no governing body of wiffle ball, and there never will be. And so it is what it is, and you keep doing you, and I'll do me, and East Coast will do them. Midwest will do them. It's all okay. And PLW in Vegas will do theirs. Right. So it is really interesting. And so your rules are unique. And I've heard people talk about your rules. You're a talking point. The relevancy of your league. It's the difference. And people talk about how your league's different. And among my colleagues, one other thing I'm fascinated with and looking in your rules, the CBA, these contracts that you put, you can have trades and the trades involving cash. Did I read that right?
Yeah. That's happened quite a few times too, where a team just wants to get rid of a guy and another team's willing to pay him $50 or something. So there's a quick, easy $50.
It's amazing. You had to specify what is involved in a trade because I kept waiting. could you just trade a bag of chips for somebody or something? And you know, so how funny would that be, right? So I'll buy you a meal at Applebee's or something. But you have to specific. It does say. No,
it was kind of funny. There was about three seasons ago. There was a cash for a player trade that happened, and it was like maybe $100 or something. And like a whole season went by, and with a GM or whoever, one of the team that was involved that was supposed to get the cash comes up to me. And he's like, you know, so-and-so hasn't given me my $100 for that trade yet. Is there like anything you can do about that? And so it was almost like we almost had a little scandal on our hands where I had to get involved and say, hey, you need to pay him his $100. But wow. It's just kind of goofy and funny that.
Hey, again, Kel, just to you, man, I really like some of the corpse of it. Tell me what, other than the field that we talked about of trying to find a permanent home, what is JAL's future plans? What are you and the other guys in charge looking for in the future?
Oh man. I don't know if I've ever really looked at what to do with the league more than about a year out, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if I can really answer that. I mean, just keep doing what we're doing, doing it well. And then when certain opportunities arise, make sure to cash in on them. If anything needs to be changed or altered, not being afraid to go ahead and do that. I would say we grew so much from about JAL 9 to JAL 14, 15. And then we grew teams wise a little bit more. I think we got up to 12 teams in JAL 15 or 16. And we've been at 12 teams ever since. And to be honest with you, we could have gone up another two teams probably any of these seasons since then, because there is enough people out there. I think we could have done it and it would have been fine. But we just feel like 12 teams has been such a perfect number for us for so many seasons now. And also that would like dilute the talent a little bit. You know, some of the teams wouldn't be quite as good. Scheduling would be a lot harder. So I don't want to say that we're content with where a lot of the things are, because I don't think you ever want to get too complacent, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm also a big believer in not overextending yourself to a point where it's unmanageable and it gets too hard and then you get burnt out. So I think the thing is when the league was growing, like I said, back around JAL 9 through, 10, 11, 12, 13, I think at that moment, we kind of started getting this idea of about where, things are at right now and have been the last few seasons. Like we could see that vision, like, man, I think we can get to this point. That would be really cool if the league could be, what it is at present. And now we're here. So there's also an element of kind of just enjoying the moment and enjoying, the success we've had to get to this point, and recognizing we wanted to get to this point so bad that, let's not try to do something too wild that, ends up kind of making it all fall down. Not that it would, but just, I guess, I don't know if that was a good answer or not, but I hope I kind of
explained. It is. And again, I'm just fascinated listening and to you talk about your league and how things work. One, on your scale, there are people across the country that know JAL, and we've brought it up in a couple of United Wiffle Ball meetings before. Do you yourself keep up with other leagues or tournaments across the country? Are you familiar with any of them? Which ones, if you do?
Yeah, I would say that I keep up with most of what's going on out there. I know about United Wolf Ball and of course PLW. I went down actually, Tom and Adam Tanick last March, so about a year ago. They invited me down. Actually, they paid too for the plane tickets to come down and help them run their media for a tournament and whatever when they were still kind of getting going. And that was fun. And then I know about, a little bit about what you're doing in Texas. And then, I follow like MLW and MA too. So I'm aware, but obviously I'm not like involved in any of that stuff.
Yep. I had Tanick on Holy Commutes a couple months ago, and that was fun to have him on my podcast and talk to him. And I'm good friends with Tom. He stayed at my house this past summer when he came down to Texas and played in our state championship with some guys down here. Those guys are having some growth transitions there in Vegas as well, as they're going to be transitioning out of the field that they're at now and building a new one on another piece of property. They're in flux as well. And so brings me to the next point. Has there ever been, other than Derek Anderson, because I saw Derek a couple of years ago when he came down here to play in Fast Plastic, has there been any discussion amongst some of the players of wanting to try to put together an all-star team? Because you have some fantastic players. Some of your guys are amazing, right? I mean, with all the players there, you got some great pitching, you got some great hitters. Has there ever been any discussion about, hey guys, who wants to put a team and go to this national championship?
Maybe a little bit, not a lot, to be honest with you. I think just because it's so far away.
Yeah.
The flight is just so long and expensive.
That's true.
So honestly, not a lot, but I do think, I think probably our best, four handful of guys could go to some of the stuff and be competitive. I don't think they'd win it or anything like that, but I don't think they'd take last place either.
Yeah. I'd love to see it as a ambassador of the sport. We've got some West Coast guys that come with Mock and Sylvie and some of those guys in California. And there's been several teams from California over the past that have come and done well. I'd love to see you guys out there sometime if it ever were to happen. If you ever had a couple of guys that got real excited, that's what it's going to take, right? Is a couple of guys that are super excited about trying to do that. So maybe one day I'd love to see you guys or some guys from out there come out to the national championship. Yes, it is far. And trust me, I know, because I actually drove there in October and took about a week and a half off and slow rolled it out to Pennsylvania from Texas. So had a good time. I don't know if I'll do it again driving, but really did have a good time. So, hey, Kale, I want to thank you for coming on to chat with me a little bit about your league. And I've learned so much about how probably a lot of my questions lead to more questions that I'm probably now going to have. Be wanting watching a little bit more of your social media. If people are wanting to know more about the JAL and watch some of your games, how do they find you on social media and websites?
Social media, let's see, Facebook, you can just search JAL Wiffle Ball. It'll come up. The logo's, blue, says JAL with a Wiffle Ball. On Instagram, it's just at JAL. _ Wiffle Ball. Same on Twitter, I'm pretty sure. If you want to watch games, I mean, the tapes are on YouTube, but we stream them live. The every game day we pick a couple of games to stream live on Facebook. But honestly, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, watching Wiffle Ball live, it's like a little bit boring, to be honest. So if you just want the quick highlights and everything, new this season, we started making videos after each game day. It's called Game Day's Best. And it's basically just highlight show of the game day. So that's probably the more entertaining way to watch it and check it out.
Yeah. I watched your opening day. I watched that one and, I really like how you put that together and in a condensed version, really that's all the important stuff is on there. Right. So I really liked how you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was hoping there'd be, you know, fun videos going forward.
It is. So check out JAL Wiffleball on social media and on YouTube, their YouTube channel. A lot of fun. If you're a wiffle ball enthusiast like myself, and you can't get enough watching wiffle ball, check them out. Check out Kel's league that has been there since 2015. He's got a great group of players out there. And yes, some of the rules are different than what the rest of us are used to. But it's still really good wiffle ball. So Kel, thank you for coming on to my show this evening. And I really appreciate our chat. So this is Tim Dean with Texas Tim Holy Commutes for Tuesday, April 5th. And I'll be back next week with another edition and another surprise guest. You won't want to miss this one. I'm having on someone that most people know and love him or hate him. I'm going to have him on the show. So again, Texas Tim signing off. Holy Commutes, the only daily podcast for all things wiffle ball. Here on April 5th. See ya.